Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, Turk alongside Rod here to talk about MSU's final home game, senior night, against the Northwestern Wildcats. Before we begin, a reminder once again to keep writing reviews of the show on your podcast player. If you haven't done it yet, it truly takes a minute less maybe, and is extremely valuable to us as it helps the algorithms lead more Spartan fans to the show. Also, quick word of thanks to all of you who support the show via one-time gifts and on a recurring basis. Special thanks to Patreon supporters at the Mateen Cleaves level, Bill Church, Brian O'Donnell, and Chad Hickey. Met Chad, actually, at the Michigan game. The last time Michigan State won. Draymond Green supporters, Adam Walczak, Dan Rankin, James Benton, Jim L., Michael Bosnick, who I also met at the Chrysler Arena, Paul Marsh and Scott Driscoll, and also Rich Wagner and Kent Kremet on Substack. Also to all of you at the Scott Skiles level, we really appreciate your support. If you appreciate the MSU content we crank out, head on over to thefinalfour.com/support to reach the necessary links. Okay, so the Northwestern Wildcats come into town with a depleted roster on senior night on the heels of a home loss to the now red-hot Hawkeyes. Of course, these Wildcats have had MSU's number recently, winning last in Evanston, 88-74, in a pretty dreadful performance back in January. Since January 2000, interestingly, Michigan State leads the series 33-7, but has lost three straight and four of the last five, which gives you an idea how recent the success for Northwestern has been against Michigan State. It's not really been that long, just very recently. Maybe it shows you the value of having an elite winning point guard in Boo Booey. Speaking of which, no one in East Lansing will be sad to probably never see him play against the Green and White again. Of note also, since the last time these two teams played, MSU's had Jackson Kohler return. Xavier Booker is now in the rotation, and Northwestern has lost sniper guard Ty Berry to a knee injury. And most recently, starting center Matthew Nicholson, who broke his foot despite not being on MSU's team while playing Iowa. Also, starting guard Ryan Langborg has missed two games to an ankle injury, but is expected to return for this game. Northwestern's 29 this year, 11-7 in the Big Ten, ranked 46th in KenPom and 53rd in the net, which means they need to do some work to get into the NCAA tournament safely. On offense, Northwestern is 28th overall, while on defense, they're 85th. On offense, the Cats do two things really well. They don't turn the ball over very often. They're 7th in turnover percentage, and they shoot threes really well at 39%. They're only 199th from two and don't get much done on the offensive boards at 280th, but that doesn't slow people down playing Michigan State this year. In terms of getting the free throw line, they don't get there very often either. They're 253rd in free throw attempts. Defensively, they generate some turnovers. They're 60th in turnover percentage against and 77th in steal percentage. But they don't stop opposing shooters very well. They sit 313th against threes and 205th against twos. Defensive rebounding is okay at 124th. They play very slow. They're 338th overall in pace, which is out of 351 teams is pretty about as slow as you can go. 325th in average length of possession. And now those numbers, too, are going to be probably a little bit skewed in some ways by the loss of Berry and Nicholson, I think, probably in some ways.
You know, it was interesting to me to look back on where Northwestern was sitting before that first game in early January mm-hmm. and this one. And there are some differences. Offensively, they've gotten much better. Why have they gotten better? Well, the turnover percentage has remained elite. They were 14th before the first game. They're now 7th. So that's remained at a high level. But the three-point shooting was a strength for them before that first game. But they are shooting 3 percentage points higher yeah. as a team now
than they were in early January. They were at 36 and change. They're at a bit over 39% now. And some individuals in particular, the most notable ones, Boo Booey and Barnheiser, have really taken a step up as shooters in that period between the beginning of January and here we are early March. Mm-hmm. So basically 2 months. That has been the key for them offensively, that they're even a little better than they were in terms of minimizing mistakes, and they've shot the three really, really well. Everything else is kind of on par. Interestingly, on defense, though their turnover-generating numbers are still okay, they're slippage from where they were earlier in the season. And the areas that were rough already, basically stopping opposing shooters, have gotten a little worse. So defensively, they've taken a step back. Offensively, they've gotten better. And that's what they've rode to, you know, whatever they are, 11-7.
Yeah.
In the league right now, that's been the equation. But as you noted, that there's two very important pieces missing. Barry had already been out. He had been injured a couple games prior. And then in their last game, that Iowa game, they lost Nicholson for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. So that's two starters down. And a third guy, Langborn, did not play against Iowa. He didn't play in the game prior to that. We don't have official confirmation that he will play, but I read Chris Collins's post-game notes, and he suggested that Langborn is on his way back. They're happy with his progress. It's an ankle thing. And if that had been a more critical game for them, he would have played. Given that they lost against Iowa.
I was going to say, that's a mistake.
Look, Northwestern is in solid shape, but they're where Michigan State is. There's really no difference. And in my quick glancing around at various brackets, it looks to me like Northwestern might actually be in a ever so slightly worse position than Michigan State. Now, why is that? Well, it's two things. It's their strength of non-conference in general, which they do have a win over Dayton, but they didn't really play many other NCAA caliber teams
right
in the non-conference. And then that loss to Chicago State, which at the time, everybody said, boy, that could be an anchor. Right? Because I believe that came after they had beaten Purdue. So it was, you know, you win the Purdue game, you get people's attention like, hey, they may be a tournament quality team again. And then you go lose to Chicago State. Yeah. The negative impact of a loss to a quad four team is stark. And I think that's why you see Northwestern sitting where they are in the net at 53. I'm not saying it's dicey yet, but I do think Northwestern probably, if they can't get this one, then they've got, I believe they have a home game against Minnesota. Mm-hmm. To end the regular season, I think they'd better get that one just so they don't go in with any kind of heat into the Big Ten tournament, because that's where you don't want to be. Don't want to be going into that next week feeling like you need one, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
That's a really difficult position to be in. And look, it's a shame for them in the sense that they're clearly down. I mean, we know they're down 40% of their starting lineup. If Langborn is down some percentage from what he normally is, then take it even further. And this wasn't a very deep team to begin with. So They're hurting. They do have a takeover kind of player in Booey, which is great to have. I think Barnheiser has become an excellent number two guy.
Yep.
During the course of the season. But it's that depth down the lineup that, well, you don't have Barry, who's giving you double-digit points and was part of that great perimeter shooting. You don't have Nicholson, who, for a team that's already kind of challenged defensively and on the boards, he actually gave you some of that stuff. So now you're going deeper into that big man rotation. It's a dicey proposition. You know, from Michigan State point of view, you can't let that affect how you view this thing, though, because we've seen as recently as two games ago, you have arguably Ohio State's best offensive weapon miss the entire game, and you don't win at home. So it doesn't make anything a guarantee, but it certainly is an issue for Northwestern to face. And as I say, they are going to come into this game hungry, in my opinion, because I can't imagine that they think they're already in.
You know, speaking to the point about Nicholson's loss, and in some ways, I almost wonder if it's a bigger loss. I don't think he's like a, he's certainly not like a super skilled, great player, but he's solid, you know, what he does. But the loss of him, and I want to say it was sometime in the late in the first half, but it could be, maybe it was early second half. I can't remember. He seemed like he missed a lot, large portion of the game, but they really got crushed in the boards, especially after he left. I mean, they lost 26-18, just overall numbers, and I don't remember how many offensive rebounds they gave up, but it was quite a few to Iowa, which helped Iowa put him away in the second half and just kind of pass them. And
you know, he's a guy that, look, the counting numbers are not great. He would rank near the bottom of the league in terms of fives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of scoring. He's not their best rebounder, despite being their biggest player. But when you watch Northwestern, I don't think it takes you very long to figure out that he is a meaningful guy.
Yes.
So some of it can be, even if he's not getting, you know, a huge number of rebounds, is he occupying guys who can be a presence and allowing somebody like Barnheiser, who's their top rebounder at 6'6", you know, a little over 7 a game, is his presence helping a guy like that out? I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think he sets, he's a good pick setter. He's a big body. That has helped their guards to some extent. I think their interior defense is not great, but I think it's better with him than without. Because he takes up a lot of space, and he knows how to play, basically. So I do think it's a big loss. There's no two ways about it. The loss of Berry is more attention getting in terms of his point production. But I don't know how I'd feel. I have to think about it, which one is a bigger loss. But Nicholson is a bigger loss than I think the raw numbers, the counting numbers, would suggest.
And I don't remember exactly what Berry did against Michigan State. I felt like he had quite a few like backbreaking threes, but he ended up with 22 points. Yeah, he was leading scorer. Okay, so he had a really great game. I felt like he was real important to that game, even more impressive than Bowie in some ways. Although Bowie had the ten assists. So it is kind of funny too, you know, looking at how Michigan State has generally was dominating the series with Northwestern. Now that's not saying a whole lot because Northwestern's been pretty bad for a long time. Well, for almost forever, pretty much until just very, very recently, last 2 years. But I almost think it's more a reflection of the Michigan State team than it is the Northwestern team in some way, if you know what I mean, as far as the fact that Northwestern's been getting the better of Michigan State the last couple of years. I don't think it's like a specific matchup problem. Like, except Bowie is maybe a tough guy to control, I suppose.
I think it's both. I think it's, no, I agree with you that there's not something obvious that you look at and say, well, okay, like Zach Edey at Purdue, when you just can't control, you know, that guy because of the size. You know, it's not a particular matchup problem in that way. I do think that it's a combination of Michigan State not having been as good as they typically are, and Northwestern being better.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they're going for the third all-time NCAA tournament bid in school of history.
Yeah.
And it would be two in a row, which obviously has never been done because they've only been two other times, you know? So that tells you, and this team in particular, I think it was really big that two things happened with this team. One, that Barnheiser has stepped up and given them someone other than a guard who could be counted on for consistent scoring, because that is something that last year's team did not have. And then it was also critically important that they were able to get a guy like Langborn who could step in immediately into the role that Chase Audige served last year. And he's a different player. He doesn't make the defensive impact that Audige did, but he's a better offensive player.
Mm-hmm.
He's a much, much more consistent shooter.
Right, exactly.
And so those two, and then you add it up. This is, at least when they're whole, this was a very, very experienced team. I mean, they're almost right there with Michigan State in terms of just the number of games that they're, you know, Bowie and Langhorne both fit here, guys. Barry was, I believe, a senior. Nicholson is a senior. So those are both guys in their fourth year. You know, that's a lot to have playing the kind of minutes those guys play, you know? So all of that has combined, and I think it's made them obviously much more successful than we're used to seeing Northwestern. So in terms of the status of things between the two teams, I think it's a combination of them being better than they've been, Michigan State being worse.
Well, and of course, the biggest thing for Chris Collins this year was getting Boo Booey coming back. I mean, if you had to pick one player who had to come back, the return of Booey was obviously the most important.
And we'll talk about him in a second, so I'll save most of it. But it's not just getting Boo Booey back, but it's getting this Boo Booey, Boo Booey they've had this year, particularly since January. That's been huge. And it's one of the things that gives them a real chance in this game, despite being down 40% of their starting lineup. Well, they still got that guy.
Right. Well, and it is funny because there were 2 years ago before last year. I mean, we were seriously talking like, you know, I don't know how much longer Chris Collins has because he made the tournament and then a lot of time in the wilderness. It's Northwestern, so you can kind of linger for a while. But at some point, someone's going to, you know, pull the trigger. And now I mean, you got to imagine at this point, he's safe for a long time. It's kind of as long as he wants his job, probably, unless they just totally hit the skids.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he's bought himself, with last year being followed up by this year, I think he's bought himself a longer ride. And I haven't counted the years, but it's been a lot of years now that he's been there.
Yeah, probably 10.
I mean, he's got to be, I was going to say, he's got to be close to double digits, if not over. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to me to see what happens with him, because you could look at it, and these were all the same things that were said when they made the tournament the last time.
Yep.
Not last year, but I mean the time first before. Year.
Yeah.
And you could look at it and say, well, you've done that. Now you have to consider what is possible in addition to that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't think there's big growth that's possible from here, maybe this is a moment to look around and see about trading up.
Yep.
And I do feel as if we're there. We're at a point where, and look, I don't know. We got to see what jobs are ultimately open, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there are going to be a lot more than are currently posted. We can assume that. But if you're Chris Collins, is there a job out there that has appeal? And do you figure like you're at the point in your life and he's recalled for sure? I want to say he's in his mid to late 40s now, I think. Is this a time that you look at it and say, well, it's now or never?
Yeah.
You know, either I can probably be a lifer at Northwestern, but do I think that I've really got an opportunity to truly contend for championships, be they Big Ten or national at this place? Or do I use this time and what I've done the last couple of years to go up another level in a high major spot that you think is a better chance of competing for titles? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I could honestly, neither outcome would shock me. He seems comfortable there, but you know, could you fault him? Because there's a school of thought that what he's done the last 2 years is pretty much maxed out.
Yeah.
What you can do at Northwestern. I mean, we've just talked about the numbers, right? This would be the third time in program history they've made the tournament. So that says something.
Well,
it says something about where the program sits and what's realistic to think about going from here. You know, is it even realistic to say, well, I think I can turn this into a program that's in the tournament, you know, 8 out of 10 years? Is that realistic? That would be a tall order, in my opinion. Maybe it's possible if he's really found something, but we saw, you know, there was that period between the tournament bids where he had teams that arguably had more quote-unquote talent in terms of highly rated guys, the way recruiting classes are ranked, those teams might have had more talent than his first NCAA tournament team, but they didn't play at that level.
Right.
And it just goes to show you, it can be tough. You know, you're never going to be in a position there because of admissions where you can just go compete. And that's even if you had the NIL.
Which they don't have.
And,
either,
you know, facilities and all that stuff, to just go out and say, hey, we're going to just recruit the McDonald's All-American list and make sure we're landing, you know, that caliber of player at times. I think it's very, very difficult to envision that. And so, you know, you do have to be realistic, but I can't pretend to know what's in his mind. He may be just fine. He may have looked at it, and, you know, one thing that helps is that Duke not only hired another coach, but they hired a guy even younger than he is.
Yeah.
So you can surmise that John Shire's probably not going anywhere anytime soon. So the job at the alma mater is probably not going to be there for Chris Collins to have a realistic shot at. So that helps if you're Northwestern, but I don't know where his head is at. I could, as I say, I could see either outcome.
Yeah. And I guess the other question that you can't possibly know at this point is his success related to the fact that he's figured it out and sort of the whole coaching thing, or is it a reflection just he has an elite player in Boo Booey who's just able to sort of will them and, you know, they play so much better with him. And then when he's gone, are you going to find some struggles in replacing him? And that actually, he was more of a linchpin than, you know, than the coaching. So you can't know. I mean, these are obviously unknowable, but it'll be interesting to kind of see how that plays out.
You can't, but, you know, I don't think it's all Boo Booey. I mean, Boo Booey's a very good player, but let's not take it too far. We're not talking about Urban Johnson.
No, but we're also not talking about winning the national championship. We're just talking about making the tournament. Right.
Right. You're right. Yeah. I guess the way I look at it is, you know, to me, and we'll talk about this more in a second, Booey has, over the last 2 months, entered another level of play. Prior to that, so earlier this season or all of last year, he was not the same guy he is now.
Yeah.
He was not nearly as efficient a player. So if I look at last year's team, was it solely because of Boo Booey's presence? Oh, absolutely not. I mean, they had Audige was even though he was a maddening, inconsistent player at best offensively, he was a huge tone setter for that team. Berry was very, very good last season. Later in the year, they started to get more out of Barnheiser. They had Robbie Baran chipping in. Nicholson was on that team last year. So they had other pieces. Bowie's really important, but I think what it's really about is, how does he follow this up in terms of who he can bring in to replace? So if you look at this team, and I have no idea what Nicholson or Berry's inclinations are. I believe they'd both be eligible to come back for a COVID
sure,
year.
Sure, would be, yeah.
If they come back, that helps. Barnheiser looks to me like a guy on the cusp of stardom. I think Martinelli is very much where Barnheiser was this time last year. And so I think he could evolve next season into more than he is even today. So those are some pieces. The question's going to be, you know, I have no reason to think that Collins has suddenly turned up their high school recruiting. So it's probably going to be about the portal. Can he go get a couple of guards in the portal who can hit the ground running and give them high enough level play that they can be in the tournament mix again? We'll see.
Yeah. Well, that's a tall ask.
That gets back. Yeah. It is. And that gets back to what I was saying, which is, you know, does he feel like this is kind of the best it's going to get and this is a good time to use this platform to go somewhere else? Or does he consider himself more or less a lifer there? We'll see. Because this may be the best chance he ever gets.
Right.
You know, from here forward to leave. It's possible.
Right.
You know?
It's a little bit like a mid-major coach who makes the tournament, makes the Sweet 16. I mean, if you're going to make a move, that is the time to do it because that's when all the ADs are going to notice
right.
you. If you wait the next year and, you know,
absolutely.
Make, right? I mean, that's just your moment.
100%. If you are in a situation that feels tenuous. So, you know, we've talked about, what's his name? The guy at Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, Dusty May.
Dusty May, yeah. he's almost got to go.
Yeah.
This year, if he has any aspirations to be a high major coach, because you just have no way. That's a really volatile situation, you know, and you have no way of knowing if you're ever going to be in this position again.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there are a lot of guys like that. I think it's the challenge that guys in that position face, but it also would apply to somebody like Collins, is, okay, is this the best it's ever going to get? And I've got to move on if I have aspirations about doing more than this, or am I patient, or do I think that, which I think would be the worst decision, if he recognizes that he needs to go, but he decides this isn't the right year, I think that would be a bad call.
Yeah.
Or is he just comfortable?
Yeah.
He likes being in Evanston. I've heard different things about where he sits in terms of his impact on people there, how much he's liked, not by his team, but within within the athletic department, within the university. That could be a factor. I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the same thing could be said about Izzo at some point in his career, right? He could have left for the NBA and other places and, you know, could have gone either way. And he decided to stick around just because he felt like the fit was better for him at Michigan State, or, you know, family reasons. There are the things you can't possibly know, put in the calculation, unless you, right?
There are. I do think those situations are distinguishable, though, because Izzo knew from the first point that a move like that was considered feasible, that he could compete at the highest level of his sport.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Because he'd already done it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
The NBA stuff didn't start until after he won the championship.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a little bit distinguishable, but I think your point holds in a general sense.
All right. Well, let's go through the lineups for Northwestern. This is a segment brought to you by the Brothers Jesu Gutters, and they sponsor the player that Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter. And this, I think, will be anticlimactic, but the Brothers obviously take care of gutter work. If it is a rainy time in the state of Michigan, it is, well, snowy, maybe rainy. It kind of depends on what day of the week it is. Either way, that water eventually has to work its way off your roof. Make sure you've got the right gutters and they work properly, not full of leaves and twigs and, or in my case, a whole tree. You want to make sure all that's taken care of. And so the Brothers Jesu Gutters can take care of that for you, whether you're on the west side of the state in the Grand Rapids metro area or the Metro Detroit area. They should be your first call to take care of that stuff. They'll replace, clean out, they'll repair the gutters, whatever needs to be done, whether it's your house or even your business. They can do it, big and small jobs. You can find ways to contact them at thefinalfoursnotintheschedule.com/support. And then you can find the ways to link to get estimates. 10% off, you mentioned Final Four when you get your estimate. All right, so we'll begin with Boo Booey, who we've talked about quite a bit already. 6'2", fifth-year senior, averaging 18.9 points a game, 44, 43, 84 shooting. Also, it's 2.5 to 1 assist to turnover ratio, averaging about 4.5 free throws a game. Is obviously the leader of the team, and as you mentioned, he is talented enough and enough of a thorn in the side of Michigan State on occasion that he could certainly carry a team. He sort of, in some ways, kind of reminds me of Cassius Winston, only in the sense that, you know, Cassius could almost carry the team to will him to victory at times too, just by himself.
Yeah, Bowie's having a great senior year, and Izzo made the comment today that if Zach Edey wasn't in the Big Ten, we would be talking about Boo Booey as Big Ten Player of the Year, and he's probably right the way it's ended up. I am amazed by the improvement in terms of his ability to play efficient basketball over the last 2 months. He has taken his 3-point shooting up, I believe, 8 percentage points from where it was before the first game against MSU. At that point, he was a little bit below a 2-to-1 ratio in assist turnovers. Now he's at like 2.5-to-1. Mm-hmm. He has just, the things that were always issues with him, he always had from the moment he got there, you could see this is a guy who can score in bunches quickly. And he's obviously a talented scorer. He's a guy who can get his shot at different spots on the floor with regularity. He can draw fouls. All those things were there. And from his sophomore year on, he showed that he had what it takes to at least be a competent point guard. But decision-making was always a question mark. His shot selection and, you know, sometimes a propensity to just make a bad decision with the basketball, trying to make a play for somebody else, those things were enough of a factor that I felt they put a cap on him in terms of his ability to get to that true, you know, first team all Big Ten level.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's changed this year. He's just become a much more efficient, much more judicious player. And with that, all of his numbers have gone up. He's the emotional leader of that team. He is a guy, absolutely, I agree with what you said. He is capable of carrying a team. And, you know, his presence is a big reason why Michigan State, even with the guys missing in their lineup, can't remotely assume that this is there for easy pickings. They just can't do that. He's too good and too capable over any given 40 minutes of just taking a game over.
All right, then we go on to Ryan Langborg. We'll assume he's playing, a 6'4 transfer from Princeton. He's fitting really well with the team, averaging 12.5 points a game, shooting 43, 42, and 77.
Yeah, and that's really, you know, that's, it's not that he's a bad defensive player, but Ardige was really special. Yeah. They were a better defensive team last year than they are this year. And it's, I think it's largely because of that guy's absence,
mm-hmm.
that he was a game changer. You could put him out there in those half court traps that they would run occasionally. And with his length and athleticism, he was a problem.
Yeah.
Langborg is not that, but what Langborg is a much more consistent shooter. Ardige was another guy with, you know, that was the thing with Northwestern last year, is you could look at their guards and say they could shoot them into a game, they could shoot them out of a game.
Yeah.
Because Bowie and Ardige would both take a lot of bad shots. Well, Ardige is gone. Bowie's taking much, much better shots. Ardige is gone, and he's been replaced by a guy who has great shot selection. So, huge, as I mentioned earlier, huge addition. You know, when they got him, when he committed as a transfer, Ardige had not made his mind up. So initially, to me, it looked like, wow, that's a great fourth guard for them to get. And then Ardige decided he wasn't going to come back. So that meant Langborg was going to have to be a starter, but he has proven to be a very, very good fit for Northwestern and a hugely important addition.
Yep. He just doesn't have those freakishly long arms. And yeah, some ways, I've almost seen Trey Holloman's got kind of like the same build as Ardige. This sort of like a long, gangly.
A little smaller, but yeah.
So then going on to Nick Martinelli, 6'7 sophomore. He's filling in for Todd Berry, who's out obviously with injury. Averaging 8.8 points a game on 51, 29, and 78. Shooting, also pulling down 4 boards a game.
Yeah, as I say, he's been playing better and better, and I really do think he's on the cusp of, he's right where Barnheiser was last year at the same point. They're in the same class, but he's about a year behind Barnheiser's development. So next year, I will not be surprised if Martinelli is a guy that we're talking about as a consistent, you know, low teen scorer with much more efficient shooting numbers. I can see all of that happening. For now, he's a very important player because they had him to plug in for Berry. He's not nearly the same kind of player. He's much bigger, not nearly the shooter Berry was, and so it changes Northwestern's offensive dynamic, but he was a good option for them to have, certainly, to replace Berry. And, I think he's a guy that's proven to be capable of contributing at a pretty high level, and I think there's a lot more there yet to come for him.
And the next would be Brooks Barnheiser, who's actually listed as a junior, but so 6'6", 250 pounds.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right.
So I think you're right. I think Martinelli is truly like a year behind
as far
as development.
He's exactly a year behind him. I was thinking Barnheiser was a sophomore, but you're right, because he didn't play much at all as a freshman.
Exactly. Like, he just started playing a little bit last year. Well, I guess like Martinelli. Yeah. So Brooks Barnheiser, 6'6", 215-pound junior. He is averaging 14.4 points a game and 7.1 rebounds a game, shooting 44, 35, and 75. And I feel like after that really that terrible game they played, where they, what did they lose by, like 30 or something like that to Illinois, and they can't bounce back, and they played Michigan State, you know, and he had a great game.
Yep.
I feel like that's really where he's really sort of has picked up steam and really taken off this season.
Yeah, it's been a little less explosive than Bowie, but a very similar trajectory, where all of a sudden the efficiency with which Barnheiser is playing has gone up since early January, and it's just sort of stayed there. All his numbers are better. He's the best rebounder on that team. He's been an effective scorer inside and out. the three-point shot over the last couple of months has finally started to come around to the point that, you know, if you're a mid-30s guy and you can do all the other things that he does, that's pretty good. So, yeah, he's their number two player, and I felt that way even before the injuries. I think he's been their number two guy. And next year, you know, he's probably going to be the focal point.
All right, so rounding out the five is Luke Hunger, 6'11", 250-pound sophomore. He now, of course, takes over for Nicholson, who's out with a broken foot, averaging 3.6 points a game and 1.6 rebounds a game, although that is what he was playing before in just 11 minutes. So now he's obviously going to play, you know, full-time, shooting 50, 25, and 67. So we expect, you know, it's a little different numbers probably from him.
Yeah, my recollection is he had a good run against Michigan State in that first game, where he was very effective in a limited period of time. He's going to have to play a lot more in this one, and he's a more skilled player than Nicholson. I don't think there's much doubt about that. But he's also, I don't think, in quite as good a shape. I don't think he's a better defensive option than Nicholson. So it'll be interesting to see how things go for them. As you said, when Nicholson went out of that Iowa game, it didn't go well for Northwestern.
Yeah.
And it was really down to Hunger and Preston as the guys who logged those minutes. So that's what they're going to have against Michigan State. It's going to be those two guys.
Yeah, interestingly, when the teams met before, I'm just looking at the box score now, Nicholson played 10 minutes, had no points, 2 rebounds, and 1 assist. And Hunger had 10 points and 4 rebounds and assist with 19 minutes. So you're right. I mean, your memories served you well that he was much more effective than Nicholson.
He had a big game. Yeah. But it might be his best game of the year.
Probably so.
It was against Michigan State. So we'll hope we don't see a rerun of that.
Then moving on to the reserves, start Blake Smith, 6'6", sophomore. I think he was like a walk-on or former walk-on. They kept saying that during the broadcast, last time. He's only played 6 games, but, you know, due to the injuries, he's starting to play a little bit. And he was okay. He had 11 points in 29 minutes against Iowa. He was 5-for-5 from the field, but he got exploited a couple times in defense. And there were times you're like, oh, that he is a walk-on.
Right, but since Barry and Langborn were down, he was in the starting lineup. He played close to 30 minutes both games.
Right,
he hasn't missed a shot over the last two games. He's 5-for-5 from the floor, and I think he's also perfect from the line during that time. The defensive issues, they're there, but he actually has stepped up and given them some minutes, and he gives them some size at 6'6" on the wing. And he's a legitimate wing. It'll be interesting to see how he fares now that it seems more likely that he's going to play consistent minutes, not necessarily what he did the last two games, but given the way things have been going, I'd be surprised if he's not somewhere in like the mid-teens at least.
Probably, yeah. Then it'd be Blake Preston, 6'9", 240-pound transfer from Liberty, averaging about 2 points a game and 2 rebounds a game in 10 minutes, playing both the 4 and the 5. Almost certainly he'll play a lot more 5 in this game since Nicholson's no longer around. Shooting 46% from the floor and 43% from the line.
Yeah, he's been, you know, like kind of like Hunger. He's been a guy who barely gotten to double digits in minutes per game. Just gives them a little bit of a blow, physical presence at both the 4 and the 5, but with the injury to Nicholson, I don't see much of an alternative but to play, because you're not going to play Hunger, you know, 30, 35 minutes, I don't think. So I think they're going to have to play Preston a lot too.
And finally, Jordan Clayton, 6'2", freshman, averaging less than half a point a game in 8 minutes, shooting 17% from the floor and a blistering 8% from 3.
Yeah, it's been tough for him. He's a young guard. He's a guy that they're hoping can emerge as a player down the line, but he's played consistently in terms of actually seeing time in games. They play him regularly, but he doesn't play a lot of minutes, and obviously you mentioned the shooting numbers. Offensively, it's been rough.
All right, so the player that Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter, I'm assuming it's Boo Booey. Is that accurate?
That's pretty
just like last game.
Right? I'm not going to, there's nobody to play that. I mean, I guess I could I could try and throw a wild card in and say Barnheiser, but no, I'm going to go with Boo Booey because he's the point guard.
Yeah. Okay, so then we'll go on to our player that Michigan State cleans the glass best, brought to you by the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. If you need your glass cleaned, there's no better squad than the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. Whether you're at home, you have a business, maybe you've got a high rise, whatever it is you need done, they can take care of it. They do fantastic work. They did our house. They did great work. Maybe you want your house power washed. They can do that too. They can clean the inside of the windows. They can clean the screens. They can do a lot of stuff that you don't think about. If you're lazy like me and don't think about doing all those, you know, you're just kind of getting stuff, wiping things around to the edges. So they'll take care of everything. Very good pricing too. 15% off if you mention Rebound on you're getting your estimate, and they'll come out and do things really quickly. I mean, they're impressive crew. And now that it's not ice cold, they can come out any weather. So they'll take care of things. So check out the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. You can find ways to link to their estimate at the support page at tffinots.com/support. All right. So right now it's 6-5.5. Neither of us got the point last game because Tyson Walker had 7 rebounds and led the team in rebounding again with Purdue. And so now I get to pick first. This is getting so much harder now. I have no idea. Let's see. I think second was, I think it was Walker, then it was Cooper, then Hall, I think last game. I think I'm just going to go with Malik Hall. He seems like a good default. I mean, Mahdi's going to start. His brother's going to be there. So you could argue that he might get some, but I don't think he's going to get enough minutes to get enough rebounds. So I'm going to go with Malik Hall. What do you think?
I'm going to go off the board, and because I'm anticipating a lot of three attempts by Northwestern, I'm going to go with Jaden Hankin.
Yeah, that's not a bad choice. All right. Well, I'm a dumb half point behind, so hopefully I can. I'm just worried there's going to be a three-way tie, and I'm going to get like a third of a point or something. We're going to have to do some complicated fractions.
All right.
All right. So, again, that's brought to you by Squeegee Squad Grand Rapids. Then moving on to the five keys of the game, brought to you by Nudge Printing. Nudge Printing will take care of any sort of Spartan apparel you need. Not that it's time for thinking about tailgating, but certainly it's time we're emerging from our dens and it's time to get some t-shirts and stuff. So if you're not, you need some t-shirts to head on down to the restaurant or just hang around out town, you can head on over to Nudge Printing at nudgeprinting.com. They've got great stuff. And even if you have the non-Spartan fan in your friend list or in your household, you can get some stuff for them too. Wearable, very comfortable, easy, they washable. I mean, they're just fantastic products and they look great too. So they'll make you look good. So head on over to Nudge Printing, 20% off if you type in Final Four. That's just one word at the coupon code at checkout. And we will be having our bracket challenge come out pretty soon. So the winner of that will get some Nudge Printing gift cards. Also, we're almost to the end. We have two games left, obviously. And so the winner of the Big Ten prediction challenge for the standings will get a Nudge gift cards as well. It looks like those who picked Michigan State will not win, probably. Although things are always much more jumbled up than you think. And I think there's even a chance for Indiana right now to end anywhere between 5th and 13th in the league, depending how things go, which just showed you kind of how the Big Ten is this year. All right, so we'll begin with the first key to the game is defending the arc. Northwestern's getting Langborg back. He's obviously a good three-point threat. And Ty Berry's not there, but they definitely have Barnheiser and Bowie, so they have three people who can hit from outside.
Yeah, and I expect those guys to be taking a lot of shots.
Yeah.
I think it's hard for Northwestern to score a lot. I mean, obviously, without the three being a big part of what they do. So if you're Michigan State, you don't have to worry about a significant low post scoring threat. And you also aren't dealing with a team who's got a lot of blow-by guards. I mean, Bowie is the exception to that. Mm-hmm. He's the one guy they've got and kind of make plays for himself consistently. But I think this is a team you can sell out on a little bit more than many other situations. And so that's what I would hope to see Michigan State do in the interest of trying to limit the kind of looks that Northwestern gets. I mean, if they hit shots, they hit them. But at least if you're limiting the quality of shot that's available to them, that's potentially a big positive. So that's what I would like to see is Michigan State really load up on shutting down the perimeter, make Northwestern have to go inside the arc to beat you.
Yeah, and I imagine too that on the pick and rolls that the big just stays out on the shooter and doesn't allow. I mean, I think that's going to be real important to not worry about the roll guy so much in this instance. Yep. All right, so number two, the boards. Northwestern, we mentioned, is not a great rebounding team. That doesn't seem to matter to Michigan State. They seem to play up or down to whomever they're playing as far as rebounding goes. Yeah. Boy, it'd be great to see an effort like they had against Purdue where they really gang rebound and take over and just dominate yep. Northwestern on the board. On both ends, I think you can really get some work done at the offensive end as well.
Absolutely. Now, that's what's there for the taking. The question is, are you going to take it?
Yeah.
And it's five guys really going after that, you know, particularly on the defensive boards.
Third key to the game is guard play. Michigan State's guard play has been spotty, we'll say, over this last stretch. And so it definitely needs to be better. And especially Boo Boo, you got to be careful with him. And
well, look, it's yeah, exactly. And Michigan State's guards did not stack up the last time against Northwestern's. And it's been an issue of late, pretty dramatically, in my opinion. You know, they haven't been able to get guys going consistently. And so that's really cost them. We will see if senior day makes a difference. You know, we know that it's Tyson Walker's last home game. After today, I think we also know it's A.J. Hogarth's last game.
Yeah.
We don't know about Jaden Akins. He's not a senior, but that doesn't mean it might not be his last game as well. But for two of those guys, I think we're pretty certain that this is it. So can they rise to the occasion and play their best basketball at a time when they really?
Yeah, and I guess you want to expand on that AJ thing comment real quick for those who aren't familiar with the press conference that Tom, I assume that's what you're referring to.
Yeah, it is. Izzo was asked today about the possibility of AJ and Mati Sissoko possibly coming back for a COVID year since they would both be eligible to do it. And he said the way he's treating it is that his seniors are seniors. It's the first time he's been asked about it, but it's to my knowledge, but it's the first time he's made that comment. I think we felt all along that was very likely for AJ. And I think for Mati, there had been more of a question mark, but I think as this season has gone along,
yeah,
I think that, you know, on both ends, you have to look at it and say, well, realistically, this probably should be it. So what that means from a Michigan State perspective, just if we take a second to go forward, it means that, yes, in fact, next year is going to be a changing of the guard at the point, and you're likely going to see the keys to the team handed to Jeremy Fears with Trey Holloman and perhaps Jace Richardson pitching in at that spot. Mm-hmm. I personally feel good about that. I think it's certainly time for a change there. I think what'll be interesting is, okay, we assume that means AJ Hogarth is done as a Michigan State player. Does that mean he's done with college basketball? I don't think that's any kind of given.
Yeah,
that's because I think him, with yeah. the season he's had, he has not put. You know, this summer there was some speculation because he was coming off a great close to last year. He had a great summer playing at the Chris Paul camp and had impressed some people. And so I think there was a feeling, well, maybe if he really balls out this season and builds on that, he could put himself into the conversation of maybe having a shot at the NBA. That has not happened. Clearly, that has not happened. So the question is, does he just kind of want to put this phase behind him and go try however he wants to go about it, be it, you know, the G League or overseas, and try to build himself into a pro career that way? Or does he want to take one more shot at it elsewhere? I would say this, despite the way I think most Michigan State fans feel about his play this year, if A.J. Hogarth hits the portal, he will be hotly desired. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt about
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right, too. Yeah.
He will be. And you're talking about a guy who last year was maybe all regional team. So all the criticism, which, and by the way, I'm not saying that suggesting, oh, Michigan State better be careful. That no, it's time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Jeremy Fears, a healthy Jeremy Fears, handed the keys next year. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying A.J. Hogard would have that option. Mahdi maybe too, by the way.
Yeah, I think
we'll see.
You almost imagine him a little bit more moving to a college program for another year just because of maybe his situation, because of his overseas and stuff. But
maybe so.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, let's go to the fourth key to the game, which is Pace, Northwestern. As I mentioned before, they play at the 338th place in Pace. So they're very slow. So they're going to probably try and slow it down. Michigan State obviously wants to speed it up, especially in the transition. So that'll be the push and the pull in this game.
Yeah. And look, I think it's going to be tough to be playing a 94-foot game, to say the least. But if you're Michigan State, you have to look at this game as one where you must take advantage of the opportunities to get into transition that do present themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they really didn't get much of that against Purdue. They've got to get more than that in this game.
And the fifth and final key to the game is energy. Obviously, it's senior night. And then Michigan State is, I wouldn't say this is a must win, but this is probably the easiest of the two remaining games to get.
Well, it's at home.
I mean, yeah, you should get this one, in which case we thought probably need one, two for sure to get some in the tournament. One probably gets them in at least a play-in. But, you know, anyway, there's a lot at stake. There's no reason there should be energy at this game. But, you know, that's the thing you worry about, and that's why it's the fifth key to the game.
Yeah, and it's a very simple thing. If you bring the energy that we saw in West Lafayette, you should be an outstanding position to win this game. You know, if you don't, if you come out and you play the way you did against Ohio State, against Iowa, you're putting yourself in the crosshairs. So you would hope that with it being senior day and as much riding on this as we think does, that it won't be an issue. But we also know enough about this particular group of players to know that you can't take that as a given.
Yeah, for sure. One other thing you shouldn't take as a given is your electrolyte status. If you are working out a lot or maybe you do some intermittent fasting, you want to make sure you've got enough sodium, potassium, magnesium, those sorts of things. Great way to do that without adding all the sugar and the calories, which negates your workout. Check out Element. You can find our ways to get a free variety pack if you go to our website and with any purchase. So you can get a second variety pack so you can make sure you get the right flavors. It's a great way of making water something more than water and actually tasty. Not only that, it depletes your electrolytes. You can check that out at the support page. You find the affiliate link there. So that brings our question of the week, or the show, I should say. So if you want a question answered, send it along as a text or a voice memo to me, Eric at tffinots.com. So today's question comes from Patrick Lacey. He says, I'm not one of the Izzo is washed people and by no means want coaches to retire, but I would love to hear who you guys think realistically is going to be the successor to Coach Izzo. I think Drew Valentine is the next obvious choice, but I'd like to hear what let you discuss this. I guess I'll just start with that. For those not familiar, Drew Valentine took over at Loyola Chicago. They moved to the A-10. They had a rough year last year. This year, they're in second place. I think they're 13-3 in the A-10. They are probably, at certain discussion with Dom, that they're probably not in a position to make the tournament as an at-large bid, unless they maybe run off a couple in the A-10. But even then, their net is like a 90, so they're not great.
Yeah.
They don't like it. From my looking at their games, it doesn't look like they have any bad losses, but they don't have a lot of really great wins.
Yeah, part of the problem there is that the A-10 is not maybe what it once was in terms of the league and the quality. You know, Dayton's the one team that Dom mentioned, and I would agree that could get in as an at-large. But I thought they were tied for first.
Yeah, I think they're a game
maybe
behind
not.
Richmond, I think.
Okay, all right.
I'd have to look it up again.
But they've been on an incredible run regardless. And it's a big thing because, you know, Drew, his first year, they were in the Missouri Valley, and he still had basically the core of that team that had, I think, gone to a Sweet 16. They beat Illinois in the tournament that year and the year prior under Porter Moser. And then when he left to take the Oklahoma job, Drew succeeded him. and got back to the tournament. He didn't have quite the success that they'd had the year before, but he got there, had a good year with those guys. And then most of those guys were gone. And so last season was something of a rebuilding year. And to make it worse, they were moving leagues from the Missouri Valley to the A-10.
Yeah.
So a little bit stiffer competition. I don't think there's a massive gulf there, but it's a little bit stiffer.
Yeah.
And they were rebuilding, and Loyola just took it on the chin. They had a terrible year. Well, they bounced back after a nondescript non-conference. They've been great, as you said, 13-3 in the A-10 thus far. That's impressive. He may not get a tournament bid out of it because, as you say, they're not in position to get there unless they win the A-10 tournament, but they certainly would seem to have a chance. It seems to be basically considered to be the case that there are three teams, Richmond, Dayton, and Loyola, that would be the likely candidates to win the tournament title. So we'll see if he's able to do it. But either way, he's had enough of a bounce back year, and he also is recruiting well. He's added two top 100 players, both of whom are Europeans, to his recruiting class that'll be incoming for next season. So he's adding talent as well at a level that, you know, Loyola is not a school that historically has top 100 players. So for him to land two guys and showing an ability to go the overseas route is interesting too. He's clearly the only name that at the moment you would feel comfortable mentioning.
Yeah.
And I say that because the thought has always been that whenever the moment comes, and I don't think it's coming after this year, but the thought had been whenever it comes that it would be that Izzo is going to essentially be the guy who selects his successor. And I still think that's true. I don't think anything about this season changes that.
Yeah.
And that makes it highly likely that it's somebody in the family tree, which means somebody who's been on the staff, you know, maybe even somebody who's been a player, you know, those types of things, that there's someone who's deeply connected with Michigan State basketball under Tom Izzo, that it would follow the model that we've seen in recent years at North Carolina and Duke, where they both pick guys who had been assistants to the previous head coach, Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski, respectively. That's exactly what those programs did. I think it's reasonable at this point to expect that's what Michigan State would do. So at the moment, what does that candidate field look like? Well, DJ Stevens has done okay in MAC play, but the overall record is very rough at Western,
yeah,
and they weren't very good last year. So he hasn't had a breakthrough yet as a head coach. The only other guy who's a head coach who I think would seriously be considered would be Drew Valentine. And Drew, of course, father played at MSU, brother played at MSU. He was on staff as a grad assistant before he got a job at Oakland, his alma mater, and then, you know, obviously he went to Loyola and has progressed up the ranks. You know, you're not hearing anybody really talking about this outside of deep Michigan State circles like we are.
Yeah.
Because you know, there's no imminent suggestion that Izzo is going to retire. So what does it matter? You know, if it comes 5 years from now, well, we don't know where Drew Valentine's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his career could take another dip at Loyola and he wouldn't be as attractive, or he could opt to move on to another high major job, sure, in that interim. And then you don't know. I do think, regardless of where he is, if he continues winning the way he has in two of his first three seasons, I think Drew Valentine would be a guy who would very much be in the mix just because, mm-hmm, yeah, of his, even though the only thing he didn't do is play at Michigan State.
Right.
That's it. He's a Lansing kid. His dad and his brother played here. He was on the staff for a couple seasons. It seems like a logical thing to me as we sit here in March of 2024. The issue is we don't know how long we've got until that decision is going to be made, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the caveat, you know? And I've always been of the belief that it was going to be someone from within the family. But if for some reason it weren't to be Drew Valentine, if Drew Valentine did not exist and everything else was as it is, I honestly don't know what they'd do. I mean, there's a part of me that thinks they'd probably select a current assistant. But, you know, how would that play out?
Yeah.
And, you know, Tom Izzo knows. I mean, it's, I do think it matters to him greatly that the program continue and try to build on the legacy that he's left, whenever he decides to leave. So what does that mean? Might he consider somebody that he has a good relationship with?
Right. Some of the
or
coaching.
A good, or, you know, maybe, maybe. I don't, I'll say this much. If you think that it's going to be a conventional head coaching search, the way it would be for other big programs, you're almost certainly wrong. It won't be that.
Yeah.
You know, it will be a very specific type of coach. I still lean toward it being someone who has Michigan State connections, but timing is going to play a big part in that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the only other name you kind of see hear out there even barely is Tum Tum. And now, obviously, he's not a head coach. He's an assistant coach at Bowling Green, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, does he come onto the staff at Michigan State in 3 years or something? I mean, who knows? Things can sort of change at that point, too.
And that's a good question, you know. But that would necessitate somebody from the current staff moving on.
Exactly.
And I have to be honest with you. I don't see that. I mean, I don't.
I'm with you.
Wojcik and Montgomery are probably unlikely to be getting more head coaching opportunities.
Nor do they want it, it sounds like.
Yeah, probably not. And I, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, unless something, you know, maybe a smaller D1 school decided they wanted, they fell in love with Thomas Kelly. I don't see that either. So, yeah, that would be great. I think Tom is a name to keep your eye on, but that's going to need some time. That's something like, if you could tell me Izzo's going to be around for another 5 years, I'd say maybe.
Yeah, that's my thought too.
Bowling Green's done very well under Todd Simon this year. They're not leading the MAC, but they've had a good season. And that's the first season for those guys at the helm of that program. So that's, and they were good last year at, what was it, Utah Valley, I think. So they've got, or maybe it was Southern Utah. Utah. Yeah. So there's a chance, and I have to believe that Tom would be lights out as a recruiter. And, you know, the other stuff you don't know yet, but just what we know about his personality, his work ethic, all of those things, you would think he's at least got a chance. But it's just way too early. The ideal thing would be exactly what you described. There's an opening on the staff, and he fills that job. And that would be great, because that would give time for maybe a passing of the torch to happen if there's nobody external. But we're not in that position yet. And at least for the moment, I kind of have a hard time seeing how we get there anytime soon.
Yeah. No, I think.
Because there's those, for those who think, and this has been another stupid thing that's reared its head in Michigan State online discourse in recent weeks, is, oh, they got to fire. I'm not even going to dignify it by getting specific, but they got to fire this guy. They got to fire that guy. Well, to my knowledge,
and you're talking about assistant coaches, right? Like, oh, they're not developing the big men.
Yes, rotations, all the rest. There's never been a situation where Tom Izzo's fired an assistant. Now, there has been one or two where he's really encouraged guys to go.
Yeah,
and that's been in head coaching situations mostly, not exclusively. But I just don't see him doing that. I'd be very, very, very surprised by that, to see him get rid of somebody.
Yeah.
It's just not how he operates.
I don't feel like it's like football. Like football, you can definitely see that you've got a defensive coordinator, part of your team's not working. we need to replace this guy because the team.
Yeah.
But you have such an intimate relationship with all the players. It's not like they're, you know, this roster is small. They're like with 12 guys. It's not like it's hard to keep track of everything. I just don't see how there'd be, outside of like personal issues or something weird happening, that you're just going to get rid of people.
Well,
because they're going to be operating the way you have things. They're just going to help you implement it, unless they're just not able to do that, which is at this, I don't think he's hired those kind of people. They'd be, already be gone if that was the case.
Well, and here's the thing. Oh, you know, two of the three guys have been to multiple Final Fours at Michigan State on the staff. Doug Wojcik, the second one, I don't believe he was technically on the staff, yet he had come back as, I don't remember what exact, whether he was director of basketball operations that year, I think, something like that, with Cassius's junior year. But he was around for that team.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Mark Montgomery was an assistant coach for several Final Fours, at least two, maybe three. So he's... When people talk about that stuff, I'm like, okay, give me specifics. Yeah. What is it that's happening? Little big man development. Well, is that Doug Wojcik's fault?
That Monty can't catch a ball, right? I mean, that's
or is it right? Or is it that the personnel they've opted to recruit, which you could also give him some blame for, but this is where I'm going with this. Ultimately, all of that stuff in basketball, you mentioned the comparison of football, and it's really important to distinguish it in football because of the scale of it. You really do delegate.
Yeah.
You know?
You're a CEO as much as anything,
We know that with the Detroit Lions, yes, Dan Campbell's overall philosophy and sometimes decision-making is brought to bear, but it's Ben Johnson's offense.
Right.
You know, we know that, and that's the way it is pretty much at all the higher levels of football. That is not how it is in basketball. Everything Michigan State does stylistically, the substitution patterns, the development, all of that stuff, the buck stops with Tom Izzo.
Yeah.
It does.
Right.
And that's the way it is at most programs. So to blame those guys, I can't get there.
Yeah.
I can't get there. But it's what makes answering this question difficult, because there isn't yet that obvious answer.
Yeah. If there was some health thing to happen right now, I think that's probably where you're going to end up. You know, if there's anyone you're going to say, it'd be Drew Valentine would be sort of the front of the list. And then, you know, something, God forbid, something happened.
If it happened tomorrow, I would probably go 50-50 between Drew Valentine and Doug Wojcik.
Yeah.
That's where I would go. And I say that only because Wojcik is the most experienced of those guys, and it just seems to me that he's kind of replaced DJ as the closest thing to a right hand man. Maybe I guess I should give some percentage chance that even with the rough start he's had, it wouldn't be crazy to think they might look to bring DJ Stevens back. Yeah, so that would be a possibility too. But those would be the three names that I would think about.
Yeah.
You know, and that, look, would anybody feel great about that? I think there'd be enthusiasm for Drew Valentine. I'm not sure there would be for either of the other two, but that's probably what you'd see.
Yeah. Well, that's obviously a situation that you don't want to end up in, and that you're not
right.
A non-ideal situation. It's going to be a non-ideal solution, right? That's pretty much the way it goes.
Well, the other thing, just to wrap it up, is that, you know, this gets said a lot, but apparently not often enough.
Uh-oh.
Everybody just ought to prepare for the reality that, you know, you're not going to replace him with somebody who's going to keep you where it's been. That doesn't mean the next guy's a failure. Doesn't mean the program still can't be good, but there's very much a non-zero chance that Michigan State becomes a very different kind of program. That is a possible outcome.
Yeah.
So don't be rushing and wishing and hoping for that day to come soon.
Yeah, I think that's
that'd be my feeling.
that lacks the wisdom. I think it's pretty much that situation. Open history book. All right. So we'll wrap it up there, and we'll get back to you after my last ice cream sandwich of the year at the Breslin Center. So Until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.